Before I jump into it, allow me to provide a prefatory remark. I advertised this sermon in the plural. That would be on cognitive biases. The first one I started to write on was in-group favoritism. And before I knew it, I had more than I needed for a sermon. So today's going to be just about in-group bias or in-group favoritism. We may address other cognitive biases another day. All right, so with that said, let me start out with a story. This story is about a very small congregation my wife and I once joined. We were the youngest people there, even though we were well middle-aged at that time. And for a good while, at least a year, maybe 2 years, we were the newest people. There were many people in the congregation that had been UU longer than we had been alive. Some of them had been members of that congregation before UUA merger. We were the only ones there, however, that had been UU somewhere else. We eventually left and began attending a different UU church. Why? Well, over a period of time, each of us came to appreciate that the weight of a person's opinion at this congregation was directly tied to how long they had been part of the congregation. Or in other words, how long they had been part of the in-group. I have a poignant example of that in action. So this congregation was so small that about a third of us needed to be on the board in order to meet the bylaws. And the size of their board was a relic of their past when they were a much larger congregation. Well, I observed to the board, when I was a board member, I observed that it seemed like we were burning out all of our volunteer hours just trying to keep the board populated. We didn't have enough spirit of volunteerism left over to do anything else. Because people were already willing to do something, we're doing it. They were on the board. So I suggested, well, why don't we just reduce the size of the board? One of the church's patriarchs, I'm going to give him the pseudonym of Zeke. Zeke said, well, we'd have to have a vote and adjust the bylaws, and that's just a whole lot of trouble. Well, had something like that happened just once, I might not have thought much more about it. But over a period of time, both Leanne and I observed that this was a pretty consistent pattern of behavior. And my story here points to the cognitive bias of in-group favoritism at work in a UU congregation. So as you see on this slide, a cognitive bias is an error in our thinking that occurs when we process and interpret information in the world that affects our decisions and judgments. But we don't necessarily always arrive at the best decision or the best judgment. Why? Well, our emotions, our personal psychology, our life experience, social pressures, and also the limitations of our brains that sometimes make shortcuts for us. These things all impact the judgments and decisions we make, and that's what causes a cognitive bias. Guess what? It happens to all of us. It's part of being human. One kind of cognitive bias is in-group favoritism. Human beings, we instinctively join together in groups. It's part of our evolutionary heritage. Grouping together is hardwired into who we are as a species. But it's just as natural and instinctual for us to have a tendency to favor our own group over other groups, or as those we see as outside of that in-group. It's sometimes hard to be the Spider-Man among a group of Batmen. And I like this cartoon here. So if you'll see, we've got the exact same things on both sides of this river here. Everything's identical, but when it's our group, it's awesome. And when that very same thing is part of the other group, well, then it's barbarous and primitive. That's what in-group favoritism is about. Now, obviously, there's a meta way we could look at in-group favoritism. This is what nationalism is all about, xenophobia, and so on. Today, we're going to look at it in terms of how it can impact a congregation and potentially be harmful to a congregation and hold us back. So I'm about to hold up a mirror, and I invite all of us, including me, I'm not discluding myself, to take a look. In-group favoritism has occurred at our congregation. Why can I confidently say that? Because it happens everywhere. It's part of being human. So the purpose for us exploring this topic today is about increasing our awareness. When have we let in-group favoritism impact our decisions? When do we feel like we've seen it in the congregation? Do we feel like some people have been marginalized by it? I don't have answers to these questions. And I'm going to use some of my own UU experiences as vehicles to get us thinking about how in-group bias can show up in a UU congregation. How closely my examples may or may not fit us is not what I'm concerned about. My goal is to just get us thinking about how something like an in-group bias can have real consequences. So I just want to make clear, today's sermon is not about a passive-aggressive attempt on my part to wag my finger at us because we're naughty. I don't think that this is any more of a problem for us than it is for anybody else. It's an invitation to reflect. It's an invitation to think about how this part of being human can impact a group and impact a congregation. So let's return to my example with Zeke. How is that in-group favoritism? Well, there was wide agreement in the church that volunteerism was low. And everyone said, well, we want to do more. So I offered an observation on the source of the problem and what seemed to me a reasonable solution. The truth is, my idea was a pretty good one. Zeke killed off my idea, not by explaining how I made a mistake and identifying the source of the problem. He didn't offer a better solution. He just offered an emotional response. That's trouble. We don't feel like doing it. The truth is that changing a church's bylaws is actually not all that much trouble. And even if it was hard, we'd only have to do it one time, and the benefit of it would be ongoing. So this is why both my wife and I eventually learned that the value of our opinions at this congregation wasn't tied to the content. It was tied to the person that idea came from. It didn't matter that we were the only ones there who had experience from other congregations. Didn't matter how reasonable or meritorious our ideas were. People listened to Zeke and the other long-timers because they were part of the in-group, and people granted them emotional loyalty based on that fact. We were newbies. We were part of the out-group, and therefore our ideas mattered less. So before I move on, I want to acknowledge that this particular story I'm telling about Zeke, more is going on there than just in-group favoritism. The story is also about status quo bias, that is, people preferring the current state of affairs. And if you've ever tried to change something at a congregation, then you'll know what I'm talking about. This story also reveals the dynamics of family-sized churches. So churches under 50 people tend to operate on the authority of their patriarchs and matriarchs. Now, those things are also at operation in that story. I'm going to put them aside for another day. For now, I'm just going to acknowledge, yes, there's more going on in that story than just in-group favoritism. But that's what I want us to zero in on now. So let's move to some additional examples of how I've seen in-group favoritism at work in other UU congregations. Sometimes the in-group favoritism can be very overt and very purposeful by the person doing it, because some people deep down don't actually want their congregation to grow or to change. Some people have some psychological or personal needs that are getting met by things just as they are, and they don't want any tampering with that. There are all other people who like to flaunt their in-group status and make it hard for others to acquire what they have. I'm sure many of us have experienced that before in a workplace or a family. It can also happen in a congregation. there is identity and self-esteem tied to the groups that we belong to. But sometimes some people have so much self-esteem and identity and psychological need tied to their congregation that they'll be obstructionist, even downright nasty. I don't know if Zeke or the people who went along with him were doing what they did with full awareness or on purpose. But I have another story where there's no doubt the person knew full well what they were doing, and the in-group bias was on full display. So here's that story. I was once at a board meeting, not here, it's not our story. I was once at a board meeting that had two agenda items. One was co-hosting events with the local pagan group. And another agenda item was about bringing our congregation into the welcoming congregation program. One board member, let's call him Wesley, stood up and said quite feistily, "I give generously of my time and money, and these things are too weird for my tastes. So I just might take my time and money elsewhere if that's what we're becoming." So a board member stood up and had what I would call an adult tantrum because the congregation was getting weird in his opinion. Now you might be thinking, oh, come on, a UU didn't actually say that. Well, I wish it wasn't a true story. I also wish it was the only one like it that I had up here, but it's not. Behavior like that is clearly not acceptable. It's obviously intolerant and contrary to UU values. It's also a form of bullying. Threats, bullying, holding the congregation hostage until you get your way. These are toxic forms of in-group favoritism. It's an effort by someone to try and police the boundaries of the congregation to keep it exactly as it is in the way that they want it. If and when we see things like that, where a person is attempting to exert their will over the whole group to keep others out, well, then the rest of us need to engage and challenge it. That's not easy. That's not pleasant. But if we don't, then it means that we're condoning that kind of behavior and we'll end up being held hostage. And behavior like this will also take its toll on the overall health of a congregation. Some people don't let you know that behavior like this hurt them or disturbed them. Sometimes they just let you know with their feet. They don't come back. There are Wesleys around, and this is essentially just rolling out an unwelcome mat. So this is very above board and overt and purposeful. There's also ways to communicate favoritism for the in-group in ways that are much more subtle, less blatant. It's also possible it could be entirely out of our awareness and accidental. And probably in-group favoritism happens more often in this way, out of awareness, accidentally, not on purpose. But just because something is hidden doesn't mean it can't be harmful. So let me give you an example of how in-group favoritism can be much more disguised and outside of the awareness of the in-group. I've done lots of guest preaching, and I've had opportunity to see how lots of congregations handle their services. I've lost track of the number of times I've had an experience where the service moved on to another thing without any explanation. My experience would often go like this. Then I'm looking at the bulletin like, okay, well, I guess I was supposed to be born knowing what came next. Oh, we're reciting something. I wonder where those words are. Oh, they're on the screen. Well, by the time I figure it out, then we're done. What message is being communicated to that person? Now, when I'm the guest preacher, it doesn't really faze me. It doesn't hurt my feelings. But what if I'm there to potentially join that congregation? Aren't I really being sent the message that our services are for those of us who are already in the know and understand all of the silent cues and already know what's supposed to happen next. We don't care if you visitors can follow along or not, or if you feel comfortable, or if you feel marginalized because you can't fully participate. That's an in-group bias. Our services are for us, and they require a pre-existing familiarity. Now, obviously, no one's saying that. But hospitality is about so much more than just being nice when you meet someone. Of course, people are nice. If we're not even being nice, well, then we got bigger problems. Being nice is a given. Everything we do after that, before, during, and after the service, it can feel open and welcoming, or it can feel closed and alienating and designed for insiders. Now, obviously, the topic of in-group favoritism is absolutely tied to growth, and we can explore the topic of hospitality and growth more another day. But what can we do to increase our awareness about something we may not even be aware we're doing? Most UUs aren't born into UUism, so odds are that at some point, most of us were part of a UU outgroup. But even if that's not true for all of us, we've all been part of an outgroup somewhere, sometime. So it might be worth refreshing our memories about what that was like. What was welcoming? What was not? What made you return? Right? In other words, what do our services and our congregation look like from the perspective of the outsider? What are we doing well? What could we aspire to do better? And again, I don't have answers to those questions either, but I invite us all, including myself, into reflecting about that. All it takes is some caring and some effort. Sometime in our near future, we're going to be launching hybrid services, which is uncharted territory for all of us. Doing a new type of service in a way that makes everyone feel welcome and connected is something we're all going to have to figure out. Forming groups, it's entirely natural. Favoring our group and those in it over other groups is also something that we do by instinct. There are UUs around who like to flaunt their in-group status and might behave in some unsavory ways to guard that status. More likely, in-group bias will show up in ways that insiders don't always recognize or see. But we don't have to resort to just throwing up our hands and saying, oh, well, it happens. Because if we're willing to be self-reflective, if we're willing to increase our awareness, if we're willing to imagine ourselves sometimes in the place of the outsider, these things can all help in mitigating in-group bias, both in overt and covert ways. I know that we can, and I know that we will, because we all love this congregation and one another, and not just who is here now, but who could be here a future day. Each of us enrich our community, including each of us who may come in the future. So it's my wish that our mindfulness, our hospitality, and our membership will be blessed. Amen.